All right, Alexander, let's talk about the new Prime Minister of the UK, Mr. Andy Burnham. And he also announced his cabinet as well. And it is, at least to me, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, right? I mean, it seems like it's all the same people with the exception of Lammy and maybe like one or two other notable figures in the Starmer cabinet. Most of the people in Starmer's cabinet have returned, but have been given different positions.
Yeah.
Wes Streeting is going to be the defense minister. And you have the big job going to Healy. And no doubt that Healy, he has been rewarded for the post, the resignation and the post about money not going to the UK military that he put out there about 5-6 weeks ago.
That's right.
But, you know, Andy Burnham, it's just, to me, another Starmer 2.0, right? It doesn't seem very different than Starmer at all. Maybe a younger version, someone who speaks perhaps better than Starmer. He doesn't. Yeah. He's not reading a script, or at least he didn't read a script during his first remarks. Everyone was very impressed that he was able to speak for 5 minutes without a script. You speak for more than 5 minutes without a script. Anyway, your thoughts on Andy Burnham?
What an idiot! Look, I agree with absolutely every.
And you do it every day, by the way.
And I do it every day. Let me say, every point that you have made, I completely agree with. Now, we've had a huge amount of talk about how Starmer, you know, was. Ineffectual, that he wasn't a successful prime minister, that he didn't know how to communicate to the British people. There was a lot of focus on his lack of communication skills. And we get a new prime minister, Andy Burnham, who, unlike Starmer, it must be said, has a lot more experience of politics than Starmer has. I mean, Starmer became an MP relatively recently, whereas Burnham has a political career that extends all the way back to the Blair years. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but anyway. So he's sold to us as the, you know, the new articulate voice of the Labour Party, the person who's going to bring hope to the British people. And he comes along and he speaks without notes, in front of Downing Street, and his voice is a little bit more modulated and a little bit more human sounding than Starmer's. But if you actually just read, you know, a speech of Burnham's, and you put alongside it a speech of Starmer's, they're almost exactly the same. I could not understand where people see this extraordinary difference. I mean, one of the really annoying features of Starmer's speeches was that he always used to come along and used to say, "I know what people are saying. I get it." You see almost exactly the same phrase in Burnham's speech, that, you know, he knows what people are thinking and he's going to, well, he didn't say I get it, but he was going to act on it. The sentiments are exactly the same. The cliches are identical. There is absolutely no fundamental difference between the two men in terms of policy. So that is the first thing to say. The second is that, yes, the very first thing that Burnham does when he becomes prime minister is he conducts a factional purge of Starmer's supporters. Now, that is a tradition in British politics. So you get rid of the old leader and you get rid of all of the people who are seen as being too close to the old leader. So you know, people like David Lammy and the Ed Attorney General and people like that. They're all Rachel Reeves, the finance minister, they're all given their marching orders. But you're absolutely correct. Mostly the cabinet is exactly the same people as before. The positions have been rearranged, and the positions have been rearranged in a way that again tells us that it's going to be exactly more of the same. Now, Burnham is not a fool. He's been in politics for many years. He, I think, has some understanding that one of the fundamental problems in Britain today is that energy costs are far too high, four times higher than in the United States, twice as high as in France, higher than Germany's. So he understands that you're not going to get economic growth unless you do something about energy prices. So he comes into Downing Street, and what's his big idea about energy prices? His big idea about energy prices is to remove VAT, VAT tax on electricity. The problem is, as everybody knows, Britain is in acute debt. It doesn't have the fiscal firepower for this kind of thing. Already, the bond markets are reacting negatively. The actual way to reduce energy prices would be through some kind of understanding with the Russians, which would allow energy, cheap energy from Russia, to start flowing west again. But of course, Burnham is not going to do that. And he's been obliged to put, as his finance minister, John Healey, the former defence minister, the man who said that the priority must be to increase defence spending, the man, in other words, who, as we discussed in a video we did at the time of his resignation, was already, through that resignation and through the statement that he gave, telling Burnham, whatever you do, you are not going to change policy on Russia or on Project Ukraine. Healey has been promoted. He's been given the most powerful ministry in the government, the finance ministry. He is now essentially the number two. In truth, Healey is much more powerful going forward than Burnham himself is. And I don't expect this new, attempted tax cut on electricity bills to survive for very long.
Yeah, we hear you. I think Starmer said the same thing when he got into
any
office.
Number of times.
We can do better. I think Starmer said the same thing.
Yeah.
I promise you. Okay, that's exactly what you want to hear from a politician. Yeah. I promise you. Oh boy, we're in trouble. Yeah, he said the same exact things that Starmer said, the same exact things that all these politicians, especially in the collective West, say over and over again. They're all just Terminator clones, right?
Yes.
that's what they seem like to me. But what are your thoughts on this this terrible trinity of defense minister Streeting, Healey, and Miliband,
right? Miliband,
as foreign minister. So let's look at the three. I guess you would say the top positions, especially when talking about foreign policy. What are your thoughts on these guys? It sounds very bad to me.
It is extremely bad. I mean, Streeting is going to use the defense ministry in order to promote his career and to try to become prime minister, which remains absolutely his objective. And he's not going to do that by changing the policy. He's going to insist on more anti-Russia actions, more support for Project Ukraine, more funding for the military. And John Healey, the new finance minister, is going to provide him with the money to do that, even if it means taking money from other things. So that is the real message behind this reshuffle, behind this new government. It's not just going to continue what Starmer did. It's going to continue what Starmer did with even more resources, even more money thrown at it, even more rhetoric, obviously, against the Russians, even more support for Zelensky and for Project Ukraine. So that's what that is all about. Now, Ed Miliband, who's now been made foreign minister, he also has a fairly long history in British politics. He used to be leader of the Labour Party and stopped being leader of the Labour Party in 2015 when he lost an election to David Cameron. Now, I think the reason Ed Miliband has been made foreign minister is twofold. Firstly, because Burnham doesn't fully trust him. I mean, it's one of the things you do in politics in Britain, is if you don't really trust somebody, if you see them as being a potential alternative to you, but you can't really sack them or drive them out of the cabinet, you give them the grand post of foreign minister, which keeps them away from Britain and you hope prevents them plotting. Theresa May did that with Boris Johnson, if you remember. And before that, Harold Wilson famously did it with James Callaghan, but that was back in the old days in the 70s. So this is one of the things that explains why Miliband has been promoted there. The other thing is that Miliband has a history of being opposed to British military involvement in the Middle East. And famously, as Labour leader in 2013, he opposed British bombing of Syria. So this gives Burnham an opportunity to polish up his, Burnham's and the Labour Party's image with the various sections of the left, particularly young people, younger people, who are unhappy because they feel that Britain has not been sufficiently critical about Gaza, about the war in the Persian Gulf, and those sort of things. But precisely because distancing Britain, distancing the Burnham government from those things is going to be controversial in some quarters, you can be absolutely certain of one thing. Miliband is going to be exactly the same as all of the other British foreign secretaries have been on the issue of Russia and on the issue of Ukraine. On that, he is absolutely not going to pursue any kind of change. In truth, the extraordinary thing about Burnham is that he has come into government, he's become prime minister with no actual program of what he wants to do as prime minister at all. I mean, he's never given any clue as to what he would do, which would be fundamentally different from Starmer. He says now, for example, that he wants to end rough sleeping. People who in Britain who live on the streets, you see them now in many British cities. It's a horrible, upsetting thing to see. He says he wants to, that's going to be his priority. Well, I don't think it should be the priority. I think the priority should be a policy of peace, a policy of economic reconstruction, a policy of bringing down energy costs. Rough sleeping is a social issue, but it's not the fundamental problem that Britain is facing today.
Yeah. The North Sea drilling statements that he made, Trump liked that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what it's all about. I mean, he knows that Burnham does. Burnham knows that Trump doesn't like him, and that Trump sees him as, you know, very left wing. So Burnham comes in. He's up to now been an ardent supporter of green policies, as of course is Miliband, just to say, somebody who's always opposed more drilling, more energy, fossil fuels, and all of that. So, this is an easy thing to do. You say that we're going to support more drilling in the North Sea. The question is not whether it's all Burnham says, it's what Burnham and the government actually do. And I don't believe there's going to be any change there.
It sounds like there's not going to be any change at all. Actually, to you and my sense of things is that it's just going to get a lot worse.
It's going to get worse. Yeah. Yes.
He doesn't have a mandate either. I mean, you talk about Burnham's plan. I would say he doesn't have a plan because they don't want him to have a plan. No. The plan's already been chosen and set out long ago, maybe even before Starmer, the plan was already put in place. All these people do, all these prime ministers are doing, they're just managers, they're administrators,
yeah,
right? So you don't need a plan. And it's fine to say I'm gonna end rough sleeping, but I mean, it's the economy is the issue, the cutting off of Russian gas, the closing of businesses, the high cost of living, the high energy costs. Yeah. I mean, these are the big problems that if you solve these problems and you create peace and stability in the UK and you focus on the UK, then these social issues can also be solved.
Correct.
But you have to tackle the root the causes of all this. The fundamentals.
Yeah, the fundamentals.
He wasn't voted in. He doesn't have voted in by the people. There was no election. There's no mandate. No. He doesn't need to come up with a plan. No. He's just put in there to administer things.
I think you're absolutely right. I think that's exactly what it is. The other thing they're going to do, Burnham, Miliband, all of these people, they're all ardent Europeanists, just as Starmer was. That's also going to continue. But as I said, on Project Ukraine, with John Healey as finance minister and Wes Streeting as defense secretary, that's going to be, you know, full steam ahead. I don't see any sign that that's going to change. And unless that changes, unless the fact is faced that the reason we have high energy bills in Britain is because of this economic war we are waging and losing against the Russians, there is nothing going to happen that is going to bring down energy bills. It's as simple as that.
How do you say you're going to take on all these social issues, important social issues, while having Healey there writing checks to Zelensky?
You can't. I mean, you can't. Nor can you carry out significant reforms to the tax system. I mean, in order to get the situation with taxes, stable, you need to bring back a degree of economic growth. The way you bring back economic growth is by lowering the cost of energy, because the cost of energy now is a major drag on the British economy. Dabbling with VAT isn't going to achieve that, because you're just taking money from one place and putting it on another. You're just playing with the tax system, and you're going to increase the deficit in the end. So you have to deal with the problem of energy at its root, just as you said. And that means working towards some kind of understanding with the Russians. Whether the Russians, of course, are now even interested in that understanding is an entirely different question. But if you are concerned about the immediate condition of Britain and its medium-term prospects, that is what you do. Once you get economic growth, tax receipts start to rise. You can start lowering taxes because you're getting closer to a fiscal surplus or a primary surplus. That should give a further start to the economy. You might even have more money to be able to spend on other things. But until you deal with this problem, things are just going to go on getting worse. And it's going to be exactly what you said, rearranging the deck chairs of the Titanic, even after we crashed into the iceberg.
I would also say that you have to bring stability, you have to stop wasting money. And the UK wastes a lot of money. The government wastes money all over the place. But one of the big ticket items is the military and Project Ukraine. And Healey is directly responsible for that. And he advocates for wasting more money on these foreign military adventures, of which the UK adds nothing. They add no advantage whatsoever to what's happening in Ukraine. They just make things worse. But you know, if you're going to stabilize the situation, well, you're gonna have to cut all the tens of billions of pounds that get flushed down the golden toilet of Zelensky. Right, there it is.
You're completely correct, and that's something
you could do quick. Yes. Like, that's something you could do like overnight.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it would save £5 billion, and just, you know, stopping money flows to Ukraine would do that. But beyond that, you're absolutely right. The British defence budget is an absolute awful mess. Britain actually spends a lot on defense. It's one of the 10 biggest defense budgets in the world. But the fact is that even though we spend lots on defense, our conventional forces continuously reduce in size. And when that happens, you need to take a step back and ask why. Now, if somebody did what was done before the First World War, when Britain carried out a massive re-examination of its defense programs and its defense budgets, this is, you know, in the early 20th century, the Asquith government did that. They carried out a massive reform of the way in which Britain spent money on defense. And the result was a much, much better situation in the lead up to the First World War than might otherwise have been the case. And there's absolutely no sign of that. Because what Healey wants, what the military themselves are asking for, is just more money thrown at what is already a broken system.
They know it's a broken system. You know, the powers that be, the ones that are above the Healeys and and the Burnhams, I mean, they know it's a broken system. Is it just because the broken system works in their favor? I mean, they know they're destroying the country. They know that they're making people's lives miserable. But they press on.
Yes.
Is it just because they, by pressing on, they continue to benefit?
Well, absolutely. I think they benefit financially. Many other people benefit financially. There are interests in the trade unions which also benefit because, you know, the defense industries in Britain, such as they are heavily unionized. And there's also psychological issues. So, for example, you don't look at the submarine fleet and the ballistic missiles, the intercontinental ballistic missiles, the Trident system. You cannot challenge that, even though the cost of operating it is enormous, and it is eating up in all sorts of other things. And the reason you don't want to do that is because you can still have a nuclear deterrent, maybe not such an expensive one, but having such an expensive nuclear deterrent, they feel they need in order to justify keeping Britain's position as a full member of the UN Security Council. So, you know, the whole defense budget becomes a prisoner of this issue of status, of maintaining Britain's position as a premier nuclear power. And similar kind of thinking came with the aircraft carriers. We built two very expensive aircraft carriers. They have all kinds of problems. They've never worked fully efficiently. We've never been able to afford a full, flight of fighter jets to operate from these aircraft carriers. There's the question whether Britain really even needs aircraft carriers. Aircraft carriers are really only suitable for Britain to have if it's going to engage in power projection in places like the South China Sea. The idea of Britain engaging in power projection in places like the South China Sea or the Middle East is ridiculous. I mean, the Americans can do that. We can't. So do we really need aircraft carriers? Would it not be much better to build corvettes and frigates, those sort of things, and to keep them as simple as possible and to build them in quantity? There's also, we should be looking at the ground forces as well. Do we really need these enormous lumbering, heavy, extremely heavy tanks like the Challengers and Challenger 2s, which, to be frank, look over-engineered and expensive and failed in Ukraine, just to say. But to look at all of this, to carry out that kind of big restructuring of the military that Haldane did in, as I said, the first years of the 20th century, would require a much, much more intelligent, forceful, powerful, effective, strong-minded government with entirely different priorities to the one we have.
Not going to happen anytime soon.
No, it's not going to happen. No, it's not going to happen. I mean, nobody's really thinking in that way.
Yeah. All right. We will end the video there. TheDurad.locals.com. We're on X, we're on Rumble, we're on Telegram. We are also on Substack. All those links in the description box down below. And go to the Durad shop, pick up some merch. 26% off summer sale happening right now. The link is in the description box down below. Take care.